So last weekend, last Sunday, there we go, thank you. Looking around frantically for my clicker. Last week we began with some brain science, and this morning we begin with some math and statistics. So who says I don't have a great church growth strategy, right? But I thought, you know, a couple weeks ago, many of you took the Natural Church Development Survey, and if you're anything like me, you hate waiting for results. And so I thought I'd share those with you so it's not on your mind as we keep going. Here we are. I don't know how well you can see all of it. We'll go from top to bottom. I also printed it on page 6 in your bulletins, our scores. Now, keep in mind, what you need to know is that anywhere between 35 and 65, I believe, is normal, like a normal range. 70% of churches fall between there. You can go above 100, and you can go below 0. So good thing is we're not below 0 on any of these characteristics. Our average is 42, which is a little bit below average as far as church health goes. These are all health indicators. And if you look from top to bottom, some of our healthiest areas are holistic small groups, so small groups that are relevant to people's lives and spiritual growth. We're actually above average in that one. By a little bit. Loving relationships. I think many of you would have said, yeah, I think we have some pretty loving relationships. Inspiring worship is our next. And then need-oriented evangelism. And I think that has a lot to do with some of the mission work we do as far as Feed My Sheep goes, being at things like Tent City and other areas like that. Now, all of these have lots of room to grow still. But we're going to look, too, at the next four, the bottom four. Going down in order is passionate spirituality. Effective structures and gift-based ministry are tied at 37. And then our minimum factor is what they call it. Our lowest is empowering leadership. Which means, not that we don't have leaders, it's the question is, are leaders empowering other leaders, and those leaders empowering other leaders in the church to go, and then I think these are connected, to go and use their gifts and passions and lead the church in new directions. And that, friends, is our minimum factor. Some of these might be a little surprising to you. I was a little bit surprised at our minimum factor, but not at our bottom four. I think a lot of them are related. A couple years ago now, we kind of blew up our structure, our board structure and our committees. Why? Because we weren't sure that those structures were empowering leaders, and we weren't sure they were leaving space for people to follow their gifts and passions and use those, as opposed to just kind of putting them in a slot and telling them this is what you should do. So, in some ways, we've been preparing for these survey results. Now we have to figure out, how do we now build new structures that empower leaders, that help people find their gifts? In many ways, we're in the right spot to address these, but it is the work of the community, it is the work of the church to do it. We'll come back to that. Last Sunday, after worship, we had our NCD team meet, and I shared some more graphs and statistics, and they wanted me to share those with you too, as long as we're looking at numbers and charts. This one right here is called the Congregational Life Cycle, and it's the typical life cycle of most churches, not based on denomination, just the church in general. Many churches last 3 generations, and here's why. The first generation comes together, and they form a church because there's energy, because there's vision. There's this creative energy that comes together, and that inspires people around a common purpose. And so many times those churches, at least that make it through this cycle, grow because people are inspired. There's vision. There's creativity. What happens about midway? I wish I had a little one of those points. Do I have one of those? Yeah, I don't know. Okay. Oh, well, if I had a pointer, you'd see about midway up that curve, we reach a point called diminishing returns. Now, at that point, the church is still growing, but it's not growing as fast. You're doing the same work for less results. That eventually moves over into a peak and then a downward slope. And in this middle section of the church's life, from the beginning of the diminishing returns down to about here, so the top of the curve, the energy in the church is usually what we call preservation energy. We like what we attained as we created something new, and we want to preserve that. So the energy goes into maintaining programs, maintaining or gaining further stability. But then what happens after the peak, as that preservation energy continues, you start to have less and less results, and the slower growth peaks and then moves towards decline. And then what happens is we have survival energy at work. You have less people, but those people are passionate and they want the church to survive. Unfortunately, at that point, there's less people to do it. If you follow the curve, look at how the energy is pointed. This is a mathematical. If you have a mathematical mind, this is what you need to see. At the beginning, the energy is pointed up. It kind of curves and it points upward. In the preservation energy stage, the energy mathematically is pointing downward. It's pulling that graph down. And then at the end, with the survival energy, again, you have passionate people who are doing what they can. And so the energy points up again, but it's a little bit too little, too late. Now, there's this thing called an inflection point. This is a point where things change. Now, in the cycle of a church's life, there is an ideal inflection point. And that's where that first arrow is, on the top left. It's, you need that creative energy, you're starting something new, and from there, if you do that work, your growth skyrockets exponentially, literally exponentially. That's what that graph shows. Now, if you keep going along that curve, and you do that same work, you change the path, but instead of shooting up exponentially, all you've done is decrease the rate of decline. So your ideal rate, or your ideal inflection point, is right there about the top of that bell curve. That's when you get the most bang for your buck, so to speak, as far as church change goes. Now here's something that is maybe a little more close to home. On the left, you have the population of Point Place starting in 1924. Really the 43611 zip code for most of it. And on the right, you have the membership of Point Place UCC starting in 1917 with 32 charter members. Do you see that congregational life cycle happening? And do you see how it correlates to the life of our community? When the Point Place community was growing, people were moving in, and many of them were committed denominationally. So they were looking for, where's the congregational church in the area? Where's the UCC church in the area? And the church grew with that creative energy. But then you see the beginning of the tipping point and the decline. And so now, of course, we're below. That's the last number there is 2010. So that's where we are. According to this graph, our ideal inflection point, where we could have gotten our most bang for the buck of change, was about 1961. It's a sobering, sobering number. As long as we're on statistics, some of you saw the Pew study, research study that came out on religious affiliation in America, and there you see most churches declining. The mainline church, which we're a part of, the mainline Protestant church, in the last 7 years went from 18.1% of the population down to 14.7. That's a huge decline for just a 7-year period. And that number that's going up from 16.1 to 22.8, those who don't claim any faith or religion at all. So that's the growth happening in our society. But this isn't a math lesson, so you can all take a sigh of relief. This is a sermon. And this brings us to Jesus' words about the church, because last week when that Pew study came out, there were all kinds of headlines about how the church is dying. I want to read some words that Jesus has for us this morning. Jesus said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" And Simon Peter had answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." Note that. The Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon. I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades," some translation, older translations say, "the gates of hell will not prevail against it." The phrase, "gates of Hades," is a phrase that if we were living in Jesus' day, we would have known that to be a metaphor for death. Hades was the realm of the dead. And so when Jesus says the gates of Hades will not prevail against it, he's saying death will not prevail against the church. It will not happen. You see, God is building a community through Jesus that not even death can overcome. And so the word this morning, friends, is that the church is not dying. Can you say that with me? The church is not dying. In fact, if you looked at a study of the global church, you would see places where you least expected it, where the church is thriving, where the church is booming. And so even while these numbers in our little place, part portion of the world are going like this, the church is not dying. The church cannot die. The church, by definition, is where life happens. Because the church is where the living God dwells. Now, that's not to say that no churches will ever pass on. But it is to say that God's church, Jesus' church, when he says, "On this rock I build my church," Jesus' church cannot and will not die. The church will live. So friends, I think this changes our perspective just a little bit when it comes to what we're doing here, who we are as the church, what is the work of the church, and what is the work of a disciple as a part of the church community. And our work, friends, is not to save the church. The church doesn't need saving because the church cannot die. So that all that survival energy, that, oh, how can we survive? That's not our work because the church will live. Gail Engel, who's a pastor, a retired pastor in the UCC, he's one of the leaders in this young clergy program that I'm in. He always talks about, he says, it's not the future of the church. It's about the church of the future. And that's a big distinction there. Because if we're worried about the future of the church, our question is, will it exist? How can we save it? But if our question is about the church of the future, the question is simply, what will it look like? Now, both of those questions can be scary. Because both of those questions can have answers that we don't like and we aren't comfortable with, and they demand something of us. But notice the difference in the question. The question of the church is not, will it exist? The church cannot die. The gates of hell cannot prevail, will not prevail over the church. Our question is, what will the church of the future look like? See, the question, when we look at our empowering leadership thing, our minimum factor of empowering leadership, the question is not, is the church empowered? You see, Pentecost has the answer for that. The church is empowered by the Spirit. The church is where the Spirit dwells. The question is, are we willing to receive and live in the power of the Spirit? Are you opening the windows so that the power of the Spirit can enter into your life, that you can own that empowerment? Or, for those who are leaders in the church and who have owned that, are we going to hoard the power for ourselves? Or are we going to use the power of the Spirit to share with others, to empower others, to call others into their work as leaders of the church? The question is not whether the church is gifted, Looking at gift-based ministry, our second minimum factor. It's not whether the church is gifted. The church is gifted with the many gifts of the Spirit. The question is, are we passionate about discovering our gifts and cultivating our gifts and using our gifts for the sake of the world and for the sake of the mission of the church? You see, what all of these things really at the bottom have in common, and they do have something in common, is that all of those are the work of the people. Are necessarily the work of the people. You know, I can plan a worship service. One person can do that. Two people can do that. You know, a couple of us might be gifted evangelists, and we can go out and share the good news with people. But empowering leadership is necessarily the work of the people. It means, by definition, that more and more leaders are growing up and being developed and taking on the task of leadership. Gift-based ministry means that more and more people are using their gifts, not just one or two people are using their gifts. These areas to work are the work of the church, are the work of the people. And this is the community that was envisioned by Joel, the prophet Joel, 2,500 years ago. This is the community that Jesus was building. This is the church that Pentecost birthed. It was not, and never, it would never was a community where some people were empowered, where some people were gifted, and everyone else followed the lead and consumed their gifts. This community was always a community where the young and the old, where men and women, where the haves and the have-nots came together and dreamed dreams and envisioned a future together and prophesied, as Joel says, who speak the creative and life-giving words of God to one another and to the world. This has always been God's dream. A community of empowered, gifted people living together for the sake of the world that God loves. And so God yearns that you would open up your windows, the windows of your life. God yearns that we would open up the windows of our church and allow the Spirit in. God yearns that you would be healed and transformed and compelled by the love of Christ. But friends, if you and I and Point Place UCC would rather shut our windows and go on and do our own thing, the church will carry on. God's dream will be realized and fulfilled. Because death cannot overcome life. That is the story of Jesus. That is the story of the cross and the empty tomb. That is the story we've chosen to live. The question is not, will death win? The question is, how is whatever dying is taking place, how is that making room for new life? So no matter what havoc death and dying seems to be wreaking in your life, in the church, in the American church, right now, if you have put your trust in this story, the story of Jesus, if you have been baptized into this death-defying community called the church, you will live. And you will live abundantly in the new creation that walked out of the tomb on Easter morning. You will live, and you will live abundantly in the new community that was formed and birthed when the Spirit rushed into that room on Pentecost. We will live. So let's live like it.